All right, not you.
I'm
not going to have that
part. Dang it.
I know. Okay, so let's start with, and Christy, were you going to do this?
I can.
Good.
All I can say, my name is Christy Walters, and I'm the district formative assessment coach for Corona Public Schools, as well as one of the famed state leads. So back in 2017 in Austin, Texas, when the FAST-SCAS team got together, which is a group of people from all over the country that had a focus on formative assessment, this is the definition that they came up with. So I want to give you just a second to look at this definition and turn to your partner and talk about what do you think the critical attributes of this definition are? What do you think kind of sets it in motion for the work that we're trying to do to increase student learning?
I like how I'm switching from my coffee to my feet, my water. Yeah, my coffee.
So some of the things that you might notice in this definition is that it matches up really well with the graphic that you were handed when you came into the session. That on the teacher's part, it's really planned. That they are implementing intentionally these formative assessment practices in order to engage in all of the components and elements of the formative assessment process. So if you're familiar with the work of Margaret Heritage, and she really does a lot of the intentional learning of the lead team throughout the state of Michigan, she wants to slap anyone who calls them formative assessments. They're not a thing, it's not a noun, it's a process. So we see that the planning is on the part of the teacher, and then we have the students and teachers engaging in developing those learning targets. And that's when we have that success criteria for what students are supposed to know and be able to do. And it's so much more powerful, and the students are going to share some of that with you today, when they get to take a part in understanding and analyzing what it takes to really be proficient at something. Then we're talking about how the teachers are constantly checking for student understanding. They constantly want to know where their students are in the learning process, and then they use feedback in order to tell students, here's what you're doing really well. Now you've seen and understand the goal. What is that very next step to get you one step closer to that goal that you have helped to envision as you've worked on that success criteria as well? And then we have the teachers who are constantly making decisions, one decision after the next, every couple of seconds deciding, what is it that my students need from me next in order to increase their learning? And in this process, the students take more ownership over their own learning. They're saying to themselves, okay, where am I at compared to what I said was proficient when I had an opportunity to analyze that work as well? What do I need to do next? What goal am I setting for myself? How can I express my learning to my teacher in a way that helps them to understand what it is that I'm learning that might look different than what the teacher was thinking, and then for them to make decisions about what they're going to do next. So if you'll notice in your graphic, the student is at the center of all of it, because all of that hard work is because of the students and how much we value that they're actually learning. It's not just about us teaching, it's about the outcome of them actually learning, being able to do something with the knowledge and skills that we're helping them to acquire. And actually, there's the graphic right there. So those three questions that really guide us in our formative assessment process journey is, where are we going? So always having that idea that we can hit a target that doesn't move, that when we know what it is that we're supposed to know and be able to do, and our students are part of that and have a deep understanding, they absolutely can hit that goal. Mr. Guskey talked about that this morning, and in his session afterward talked about that even more deeply when he talked about how students truly have to understand what that is, and that he learned under Bloom, and he talked about how that was really Bloom's big thing, that when students can understand it, they can all get there. It's going to take some more time. It's going to take the teachers differentiating some things for students, but they can all get there when they understand what that looks like. Then what does a student understand now? So we're every second figuring out what is it that our students know, and then how do we get them one step closer from where they're at right now. It was Dylan Willem who talks about this idea that if we students leave our classroom before we know exactly where they're at, we're already behind the eight ball. There's almost no way to catch up from that. We lead busy lives outside of school. We don't have hours and hours to put in. We need to know right now where our students are. And Margaret Heritage says that the feedback we get from our students, the information we get about where they are right now, we want to be out of date 30 seconds from now. If we haven't done something with what we know our students know and are able to do right now, then we haven't done them any service. And then these are just a list of the elements of the formative assessment process. So those five components that are on your sheet are broken down. And we encourage, if you don't have FAME teams in your building, we would encourage you to consider becoming part of the FAME project. And the coaches have a coach's guide and the learners have a learning guide that help to explain these elements that go with the components and what those look like so that they can engage in some deeper learning as a team. Because again, this is a process. As John will share with you in a little bit, we're on our 9th year journey of this process, and I feel like we're just scratching the surface. So there's a lot of learning. Even the professionals in this field are constantly shifting their mindsets around it and how we can even take students to a deeper level than they're already at. All right, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. John Fattel.
Let me just transition to something. So as you came in, you would have the index card. So you have some of the content, of the FAME project, of which Corona's been a part of for several years. So be thinking, as you listen to Mr. Fattel, about what questions you might want to ask the kids. So if you would put that question on the card, then we'll do one more transition to turn that over to the students, and we'll collect those cards. Jennifer and Ann Lynn will do that. And we'll just kind of pretend that you're not here, and I'll get them the questions, and we'll see what we get. Right, thanks, John.
Thank you, Kim. I am John Fattel, superintendent of Corona Public Schools. I've been with the district. I graduated from the district, taught 4 years somewhere else, and then came back home in 1998, and I've gone through the ranks as teacher, assistant principal, principal, curriculum director, and so on until a superintendent. This is my second year. So I am familiar with the process, and one of the things before I get started is I'm trying to figure out how to tell my wife tonight that another woman said that I was heaven sent. So I don't know if I'm going to share that or not, but we'll see. So we have started along this process for a long time. I was middle school principal at the time when we started. I'm not going to go over all of the information about our district. I think that they'll get this presentation. So you'll have that, and you can see the type of district that we are. And so we started in 2011-12, and it was on a voluntary basis just with department heads in the middle school. We kind of voluntold some people, or at least went to people who we felt really would be interested, who were learners in our building that would take on this task. And we had someone from every department who wanted to do so. Then they went through the training, and then we started having those meetings the next year and talking about the formative assessment process. And what Christy said earlier is we still struggle with this 9 years later of having all of our teachers understand that it is a process. So we are continually fighting that. We still have teachers say, well, yes, I gave a formative assessment quiz on Friday, and I gave a formative assessment yesterday. So it still is ongoing. We've learned a lot. I could spend probably a full day talking with you about some of the mistakes that we made along the way, some of the great things and decisions that we made along the way, and things that we would have probably done differently now that we've gone through the process. But we're still learning. So, and I know that's not the main topic of today. Just know that we would be more than willing to talk with you ad nauseum about the whole formative assessment process and how we've done this. So again, you can see where we are today. We started, it was all completely voluntary, first at the middle school at a building level. Then we developed some grade level teams throughout the district, strictly voluntary of people who wanted to be a part of the formative assessment process. We had several people within our district who became coaches, and this is the first year that we finally felt that we could mandate a formative assessment teams in every building in our district. We had professional development at the beginning of the year that centered on it, And we actually negotiated into our contract this year, instead of having just 5 full days of professional development, we had 2 professional development days at the beginning of the year, 1 coming up actually in March, and then we have 12 hours built in either before school or after school in each of the buildings where we are talking about formative assessment. So we have small chunks throughout the course of the year so we can talk about how we can implement this process in the classroom and trying to, and that's mandatory K-12. So that this is the first year, again, 9 years later, now we've made it a full, this is what we are doing. It's not going away. It's not a fad. This is what we do at Corona.
I think so there's just my guidance, you know, in terms of if you have questions. And so I'm going to pull a chair here. And guys, you're going to pretend that you're not there, all right? But what you can do right now is to say who you are and what grade you're in. Okay, does that work?
We'll start here with Noah.
No.
Oh, crap.
My name's Noah. I'm in 7th grade. What else?
That's fine.
My name's Regan, and I'm in 7th grade.
My name's Lexi, and I'm in 7th grade.
My name's Kate, and I'm in 7th grade.
My name's Lydia, and I'm also in 7th grade.
Okay. Do their voices come across over there?
Yeah.
You guys have got this made. Yes. Right, so what are there questions to bring forward? I got a few in my hand. I had... the FAME coaches send me questions. They can't be here today, so they sent some questions too. So while those come up this way, I'm going to give you some of the questions that they submitted, okay?
Oh, boy.
All right, here you go. Thank you. So what does Mrs. Lentz, this is the teacher that came with you today, what does she do that you wish other teachers would do?
She, instead of like, just like telling kids the answer, she lets them get there by themselves. Like she could ask one question and like in my case I talk myself through it. Like I could ask her over, she could ask one question and I'll figure out like what I want to do for the entire project by myself just because of one question that she asked me.
It's pretty powerful question.
Yeah.
She's a good question.
Yeah.
Good. Anybody else? So what does she do that you wish others teachers did?
Well, she
during drama, which is an after school activity, she helps us like learn our lines, and she helps us like her and her the person that's that is teaching drama with her. Like, they give us real-life examples that we would use our projecting voices in or that we're doing in our performance.
So you do something that we call performance assessment. Yeah. And she gives you lots of feedback, doesn't she, to help you get even better. Very good. Anybody else?
She shows us, like when in art, when we're learning, like, a concept, mm-hmm. she shows us like examples and like explains how the, and like has us explain how the examples go with the concept.
Okay, and how does that help you as
a
learner?
It helps you understand like what the concept is and mm-hmm. differentiate this is a different concept and how this concept could go in with this concept.
Okay, great. Anybody else? This is again for the students, because some of the questions might go to Mrs. Lentz or to Mr. Fatale or to Mrs. Flynn, okay? But this one's to you guys. Can you give an example of a way that formative assessment has grown or enhanced your learning? How has it helped you be a learner? Yes.
So,
oh, I don't care.
So, when your teachers are, the idea of formative assessment is that your teachers are checking for understanding while class is going on. So, how does it help you as a learner when your teacher is checking for understanding during class?
It helps me know, like, what I need to, like, do and what I'm doing good at right now. So I know what I need to work on.
Okay. So your teacher helps you to know, like, that idea of feedback two-part being, here's what you're doing really well, and since you have an idea of what it is that you need to do in the end, what that next step would be to get you there. And sometimes they help you with that, and sometimes they ask you questions, like Mrs. Lentz, to help you come up with that yourself.
Mm-hmm. Our teachers, like Lydia said, they'll ask questions that will get us there ourselves. Instead of just telling us the answers, they'll work with us until we get it, if we don't get it right away.
It's a lot of questioning, mediating your thinking, truly valuing what it is that you have to say, rather than just telling you. Is that what you're saying, Lexi?
Going off of Lexi, like, if they just ask you questions, it'd, like, be harder to process it, get to understand it more.
Can you say a little bit more about that? I'm not sure I understood your answer.
Like, if they had just asked you a question, like, solve it. Like, if they explained it and how it works, like, it'd be better to process it.
So rather than just giving you a problem to solve, they're actually helping you to think through the problem.
Yeah.
This one's for the adults. An academic assessment specialist asks the question, so how were parents prepared for formative assessment?
I can speak to that. So we, as middle school principal, when we first implemented this, we spent a lot of time as a staff talking about what does the grade book look like. We're still a pretty conservative district. Parents expect to have grades in the grade book. Some of our teachers really spent some time talking about what is a learning check and have the learning targets actually listed in the grade book as opposed to chapter 3, page 23, whatever that summary assignment might be. So they spent some time to really work on what is the learning target that I want the children to learn in my class, and that became the grade. We're not to the point yet where we can just be, let's say, a pass-fail. I mean, again, that's the world that we all live in. We have to assign grades because that's what our parents are used to. And as superintendent, I'm kind of okay kind of keeping things nice and smooth. So we're still working through that process on how to make the final grade be more of a summative assessment after all of the practices happened. But still assigning a grade to that. Yes.
Is there been, I guess, any key for parents on how at home they can walk their students through questions, like how they would sit down when they're helping them do homework rather than feeding them the answer, but how do you kind of practice yourself that line of questioning that draws out
I wouldn't say that we've had specific parent nights to have that, but we have reformatted our elementary report cards so that when the teachers put down how a student is progressing on a learning target, there it automatically then can provide, they have some choices that they can say, here are some ways you can work with your child at home to help them meet that learning target. So we're progressing in that manner.
This is for the students, and the question is, how do you give feedback to your teacher in the role of learning?
So how do you let your teacher know what it is that you need?
Yeah, go ahead.
To let them know what we need or how we like to learn, we do, like, they'll ask us questions through a quiz kind of thing, and they'll ask how we like learning the topic more, if we like reading it, or if we like learning it through them talking to us. They'll ask us questions on how we like would like to learn it.
Sometimes a teacher just like straight up asks us like what do you think I could do better to help you learn and things like that. Like, they don't have us take a survey or anything. They just, like, at the beginning of class, they ask us, like, what do you think we could do better? Or what do you like that we already do? And things like that.
So more conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you. To go on with Lydia, sometimes our teachers will, like, give us, like, little slips saying, like, oh, what do you think I could do better to help you?
The infamous exit slip, I think is what we call them, yeah.
Like what Lexi said, like, after we do, like, something new, like a new assessment or something like that, not really, like, an assessment, like, if we learn it a different way, like, if they're starting it differently, like, that topic, like, they do it a different way than they normally do, like, switching it up. Like, they might ask us, like, if we like it, and we'll say yeah, because it's different, and we always, like, instead of doing the same thing over and over.
Do you like to be asked questions like that? No? You want to say something? No?
No. Okay. Can I follow that up?
Please.
Question that when your teachers are very clear about what it is that they want you to know and be able to do, so they share those learning targets with you in a way that you can understand, how does that help you with letting them know what you need help with? Does that help you with that?
Yeah, all I can just say is, yeah, it does help. I don't know why, it just helps.
It helps you know that they're, like, actually what they actually want to know what you think, and they actually value your opinion.
To go on with, like, see, it's not just like it's not just like the teacher's just, like, straight up.
Anybody else
want to
add on to that?
A follow-up. Sure. I know we talked a little bit about this on the slide down here. We talked about how some teachers will give you, this is what we expect, and they'll show you an example on paper. And you also talked about how in your math class, that your math teacher will show you, this is an example on paper, and here's kind of the not so good. So can we talk a little bit about how that is helpful?
That is helpful because, like, it's like, sometimes the teacher will, like, give us a few examples and be like, which ones are good, which ones are bad, and how do you know? And then we'll create a list and, like, do, like, down, like, the list, and, like, we'll, like, all agree on, like, something to put on the list, and then when we're done with the list, we'll put it onto our own paper, see what we could do better next, and what we do good.
It helps you get, like, the expectations you want in your, like, what you're doing. Like, seeing the good piece, like, it helps you see what you want and what you need in yours. And then seeing, like, the not so good, like, it helps you what you can fix on and, like, what you need to fix. Like, what can help you fix it. Like, seeing those two things together and, like, saying what's good about it and what's bad about it helps you with your piece, like, what you wrote. Like, more to, like, critique it because you know what the expectations that you're being asked.
A competing conversation next door, so you may have to raise your voice just a little bit, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's your chance to tell the adults what to do, all right? We all want you to be successful learners. So what would you like... superintendent, teachers, principals, what could they do to help you be the best learner possible? Yeah.
Maybe, like, more projects because, like, myself, I'm more into, like, seeing how things work and, like, actually, like, experiencing things because I don't think that, like, reading a book and, like, looking at a Chromebook is very, like, effective and it loses my interest. So, like, more projects and more experiments and things like that. That would, like, really help me pay more attention and, like, really participate more.
Mm-hmm. Mine's, like, similar to Lydia's. Lydia's because, like, homework or, like, stuff to bring home to do. it's like out of school, like help, basically. It's like helping you like understand the concept more.
Do you want to add on to that?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say homework because it's different than projects. Like homework, it's kind of like some students don't get why we have to go to school then come back just to do more work. I would say more projects, like it's optional, but you can do it, and you don't have to, but it would give you extra credit because homework doesn't interest a lot of students at all.
Nor adults either.
Yeah.
So you want more practical application of what you're learning, like real world type activities. Yes, please.
What I look forward to in class is class, like peer-to-peer discussion about how you're learning it, or like whiteboards up and explaining how some answers are okay and some answers are better than others. And like just understanding the concept or like making it a game. Like if whoever has the most points at the end like wins or something, like doing it with a partner so that you know that you're not the only one doing it. So you have someone else to discuss the topics with.
So can I just ask a follow-up question to you? So giving feedback, that was I heard kind of a little gasp in the room. How did you learn to give feedback? And what does that look like?
Like, they tell us how they want us to see the answer, or how, like, if they just want numbers, or if they want us to know how we got the equation, or if they just want a paragraph about how we could solve the answer given to us.
Maybe this could be a question to Robin. So as the teacher, how they just don't come magically, you know, pre-programmed to give feedback. So how do you instill that?
Let me give you the question. Actually, I have. Is that good? I am the distracted student now teacher, so I'm totally listening to all the noise over there. I have a perfect example for that that I actually talked to Christy about a few months ago. It was actually in a sixth grade class that I have, that some of them I had last year in art communications, where they have to work in teams to do projects, and we changed the teams and they work together. And we had they had to fill out a goal sheet because some of my assessments are reaching a goal that they decide on as a group. So I wanted to step it up a notch because I realized, I'm like, well, they're not very good at making their goals. And then I talked to Christy, and like, I really don't think they understand the concept of how to make a goal. Because so I thought, well, let's have you guys write it out. You know, we have 4 days to get this project done. Why don't you make a plan as to what you're going to do each day and who's going to do what? And they all really didn't do well with that at all the first time. And they turned it back into me. And so the next day, I'm like, okay, let's try this again as a whole group. So let's get a success criteria as to what it is to make a goal and how do you make a goal successful. And we had a huge discussion. We spent the whole day just on how to make a goal. And then we came up with lists of what you have to do. Like, for instance, you have to know, every kid needs to know what is expected of them every day. So someone in a team isn't just sitting there while everybody else is working. While I'm waiting for the paint to dry, my job is after that. You know, how not to waste time, how to make sure everybody's doing something, and how to make it so that you're not doing everything the day before frantically to get done. And we went through this, and once we made that success criteria and what to do, we went back the next day. Now, here's the thing with formative assessment. These were due on Friday. Here we are Wednesday, and we're still learning how to create a goal. So as a teacher, I knew that, well, these won't be due till next week now, because obviously we had to stop because we really didn't understand truly how to do this. We have to go through, figure that out so that we can successfully do the project, and it'll just be due next week, which everything was, the kids were fine with that, obviously. They're always fine with that. But it really, as a teacher, it worked for me because I had these beautifully done goal sheets that were unbelievable compared to 3 days before. I can't even describe to you the difference in the two of them. They were using paragraph form. They had maybe they were 5 or 6 pages long because they were planning out every day, and they wrote exactly what everybody was doing, and they really thought it out. And then they turned them in, and their projects were fantastic the next week because everybody knew what they were doing, and every group except for one reached their goal, and they were very close. I mean, they were just shy of reaching their goal. So that's an example of that. It's easier for me if I hear an example, so I thought maybe that would help out. Does that?
So last year, our district-wide focus for formative assessment was on feedback, and I got through the entire year, and it's kind of like John said, by hindsight, it's 2020, and if I could have last year to do over again, I would have done what I did this year last year instead of this year. But I recognize that it was really hard for the teachers that I'm working with to wrap their mind around giving good feedback when they didn't have good success criteria and they didn't have good clarity about what they truly wanted students to know and be able to do. So this year with our FAME teams, and it goes along with what Robin was saying and what I was so excited to hear from the kids when I met with them, that we kind of have an A meeting and a B meeting. In an A meeting, we bring exemplars. The teachers pull out what makes this an exemplar, what is the success criteria students would have to hit to make this. And then I gave them a protocol and a challenge to take that idea back to their classrooms and either have the students do a draft type of thing. So one of them was writing an opinion. So either they could take some really great opinion papers back to their classroom and have students analyze them for what makes this a great opinion paper, or they could just have their students write some opinion papers and pass a couple around to say, are these good? Are these not good? What does the good one have going on for it that the not so great one doesn't have going on for it? So the students are engaging in developing that success criteria, and then they're able to really give feedback to one another, to themselves, and the teacher truly has feedback to give, because then we practice when we come back to our next meeting, the teacher has to bring examples of the student work. We put the success criteria back up on the board that the teachers came up with, and we practice giving feedback that comes from that list of success criteria. So no more, that was a good job. Ooh, I really like that. It was spelled correctly, you used paragraph form. Nope, it was, oh, you really had a great thesis statement in this paper. Oh, I really liked your counterclaim. Here's what the student did well. Here's what the student needs to work on next. And it all came from the success criteria. And then in the classroom, the students helped to develop that so they could give feedback to one another as well. I really didn't understand your counterclaim. Well, that's a word students would have never used had they not had the opportunity to go through that process themselves. So whether or not the students recognized that was what was happening, a couple of them talked about how when I met with them, language arts class, they looked at a really good paper and they wrote on post-it notes the great things that were going on, and the teacher posted it on the wall so that when they were looking at their own paper, they could check with those post-it notes. What are these things am I doing and which one could I do next? Or in math class, when the teacher was showing a good example, a bad example, they decided what made the good one better than the bad one and where am I at on this continuum of good versus bad? What's my next step to get closer to being good? So that's been a lot of work in trying to engage students in that protocol of helping to develop the success criteria has taken our feedback to a whole other level, but it took us 9 years to get there, so nothing happened overnight.
Keep practicing.
Yeah, I think you have a follow-up right here.
So I just want to hear from you guys. How does it feel, first of all? Were you nervous with it? Are you better at it now of giving feedback to your peers on their work? And did you have any struggles with it? Because in my mind, I imagine, what if I tell my friend or, I don't like that. That's not good feedback. But how did you learn some of the skills? Like, can you give some examples of how you provided good feedback to your peers?
It takes time, to know what to look for and how to tell your friends, that doesn't meet the criteria that the teacher is asking. But you use things that you can relate to. Like, if I was telling Regan, your thesis doesn't have this sentence that it needs to have, or these key words that you need to have, I would tell her lightly, in your thesis you need these words that would make it a lot better to understand your paragraph. And we would take those, we would use examples, and we would help each other, to create a better paragraph or a better thesis.
Did you just learn that, you know, overnight?
No.
No.
Our teachers, like, would ask us what, like, to tell our friends or our partners what we need to help each other, and we would use examples. Like, there was many things, and, like, our partner's work wouldn't have all of these examples, so we would just, like, work on one or two of them and to fix the thing that was missing.
Do you want to add anything? March, do you want to ask your question to them?
I don't have my
glasses, so I can't read it.
I don't know if this will be helpful, but see if you can think about this. If I were in your classroom and I said there's a test today, there's pressure. You immediately know, oh gosh, there's some consequence from this. I'm not going to do well today because I didn't study or whatever. That's pressure. Does it still feel like pressure when you're doing formative assessment with your teacher and with your peers? Or is it somehow a very relaxed environment that just feels like growing, but not pressure?
It doesn't feel like pressure because it's not like a test pressure. It's more of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's more of like you said, growing.
It's not as much pressure, but like it's someone your age. Like, they're not going to judge you as much as you think like everyone else is. Like, it's not a big test, like, you're not going to fail it. If you get it wrong, that's okay. It's just, like, working with a peer, and, like, they'll help you on it. Like, if you get it wrong, they'll help you explain it and, like, break it down for you if you don't really get it, and, like, it helped more working with a peer.
So you're talking about peer feedback. Isn't as stressful because they're going to help you.
It's definitely more relaxing than if you had a test because you know that it's going to affect your grade a lot more, but when you like just want it, what success criteria and how they're helping you, it feels like, yeah, they're like valuing my opinion and they want to know what I'm thinking and how I'm getting there, and they're going to help me get there faster for a test.
Anybody have to add anything else?
I was just saying, everyone's
Dr. Yoakum has a question for you.
Yeah.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here. If you had the power, what is one thing you would change about grading?
Lydia.
I would make, like, the test a little bit lower because, like, it's a huge part of your grade. And, like, maybe, like, the like other stuff like a little bit higher.
Other stuff like what?
Like the learning target checks, homework, but even though we don't have that much. Like, so it's like a little bit less stressful instead of having like the grade the most important thing.
So what if the grade shouldn't be the most important thing, what should be the most important thing?
I didn't think about that.
The comprehensive classwork.
The classwork.
Why do you think the classwork should be the most important?
It's like, it's hard to explain. Like, to like come up with it in words. But like you want, I can't think of how to say it.
Gather your thoughts. Lydia wants to share something.
Well, I would think that I wish that like grades weren't so like important, because I think that like participation and understanding is more important than like the overall grade, because a student can like, they can get a good grade and they can know what you're talking about, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will ever use it, and they might not think that it's important. So I think that like, yeah, basically, I don't think that grades should be as important as making sure that the student understands and participates.
Going on with what Lydia said, like, certain teachers have, like, CF3 grades, like, participation and stuff like that. like, if you're participating, doesn't, if you're not participating, doesn't mean that you could still be understanding it, but you're still not, like, paying attention and stuff.
Can you say that one more time?
Just because you're getting a good grade doesn't mean that you're participating in what the teacher is telling you and doing.
So you value it when the teacher separates that participation grade out from the test grade or whatever, that they have a separate grade for participation and that you're engaging and that you're demonstrating your learning?
Yeah. Like when you turn and talk to someone, it's not just like they could be walking around and you could just be sitting there just like.
So do you think the people who are doing that are learning as much as the people who are engaging and participating with their partner?
Yes, I believe that the people that are participating and like talking and getting new ideas are learning more than just the person that's just standing there.
Lexi?
I think that like, because at the beginning of the year when we get our like paper that tells us what we're going to do for the year, it shows us how much our grades, like our tests count for, our district assessments count for, and our LTC, our syllabus. And I wish like that they would be more equal, like not like a 70 and a 30%, like that how they would affect your grade. I wish it would be like more of a 50 or like a 55 and a 45. Just because you have one bad grade on a test doesn't mean that you didn't understand all the concepts learning up. You just didn't understand like the questions that were being asked, because on your, like, the thing you get before the test, your practice sheet to go home and study, like, you, like, if you just study really hard and you work on those questions, it's, they're not the same questions as it on the test. So, like, you still understand the concept, you just focus on those things that you focused on last night for gathering up your information for the test.
Not really adding to what she said, but sometimes, like, I wish that, like, sometimes, like, teachers wouldn't, like, teachers, when they teach, they, like, in science, when they teach you that lava is called magma when it's not, when it's underground, sometimes I wish that, like, teachers, they would explain to you why you would use it in real life and so, like, you, like, value it and you try to remember it as hard as you can because you know how you're going to use it in real life. Because I know a lot of students who, when a teacher teaches them something, they say, like, how would you need this in real life? It doesn't make sense and things like that. So, basically, I wish that teachers would explain why you would use it in real life and why it's useful.
So the question was, really, what you would change about grading.
What I would change is, like what Lexi said, like make it like 45, like 55, like make it more even, like not as even, but like make the test lower, like not as like important to you. Like you might want to like participation, like what they all said, like participation, like that matters more. Like you can do good on tests, but like that doesn't mean you're participating like during what, like the classwork and doing like everything else. Like you could have just been sitting there and then you look up and then you see the answers and then you get it down and then you use it on the test and you get a good grade, but you weren't participating.
So are you saying that tests aren't always a good indicator of how much learning you actually did? Kaden?
Additionally to what Beacon said, like you could just like remember all the answers and you could just be like, okay, so this is the formula and this is how you do it, instead of you're not actually like participating and like learning, you're just like remembering whatever you saw on the study guide.
So you're not internalizing it?
No.
Another question for the students is how does having clear success criteria, or another term that we use is clear expectations about what you'll write, you'll make, you'll do, help you giving feedback to your peers, or even when you think about your own, assessing your own work? Does that help you?
So you'll know what you're like working towards. Like if you're like, you're writing a 5-paragraph essay, mm-hmm. and you don't know like the criteria that like the teacher's looking for in it, you won't be able to like add it. you won't be able to like put it in.
Adding to what Kaden's saying, like you would highlight the points that you need in your five paragraph essay. At, like if you needed a clear, like if it was an opinion essay and you needed a clear like opinion, or if you needed clear like topic sentence, like the basic stuff, or if it was particularly on the opinion essay.
Well, having like clear expectations also keeps you from getting off track, because it's really easy to get distracted and start writing about one thing, then end up writing about something completely different.
Yeah. Keeps you focused too.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask a question? So one of the other things that we talked about was teachers who use the formative assessment process, especially when it comes to making sure that the class as a whole is understanding the concept. And we talked a little bit about the teachers who only pick on hand raisers versus those teachers who are trying to get answers from everybody in the class. Can you speak a little bit to that, whether that's helpful? Would you rather have teachers just have hand raisers? Or what does that do to you as a learner, knowing that the teacher could call on anybody at any time?
Oh, we got something to say there.
I would prefer having like them draw sticks, because it makes you like more prepared and not like slack off. Because if you're like raising hands, they're gonna call on like the person that's raising their hands, and you don't have to do it, and you don't have to pay attention. But if they're pulling sticks, you always have to be prepared and like pay attention to what they're talking about.
Why don't you just go right down the line?
I feel like what Noah said, like you could have a teacher that only picks on people that raises hands, so you could just be raising your hand and not doing that. A teacher that only picks on kids that don't have their hands raised, so you could just raise your hand and then like not get called on like all the time. Like you'd be like, oh, I know the answer, so they won't call on you, so they can call on like other kids. But like when they pull sticks, like you have to be prepared. Everyone does, because you could be called any moment.
Like just the other day in class, we were putting the sticky notes on the board so we know what we needed. Everyone knew that they had the chance to be called on, so everyone was making sure they had all their work down before they started talking to each other about like the things that they want to talk about. And like if they were to raise their hands, like Regan said, like some kids they know what teachers do, so like they'll do a certain thing. But if teachers always pulled the sticks, they would have just such an like they wouldn't have I'm sorry. They have a better chance of like getting called on. Like if I were to raise my hand all the time, and like the teacher would just call on the kids that didn't have their hands raised, you have the option to share your opinion to the class, so other people can like gather their thoughts and stuff.
You seem to kind of like the draw the stick. Yeah, I saw that in action.
Really
quite fascinating.
Everybody's
ready. Yeah. I forgot. Okay, that's right. We just have a couple more questions, all right? You guys are hanging in there. Thank you. What would be a word or words that describe you as a learner? Word or words would you use to describe yourself as a learner?
I've said this before, but I would say open-minded, because a lot of times teachers, they try to find like new ways to teach their students, and whenever I'm struggling with something, there's like my teacher asks me to do something new, and I will always try it even if I don't think that it's gonna work, because might as well.
But you're in this classroom that allows, you know, to kind of take the chance.
Yeah.
And you don't mind taking that chance.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Good. Keep
We're just going to go right down the line, okay?
Bless you.
Huh? Oh, you don't?
Okay. I would like to describe myself as a hands-on learner, so I like Lydia said earlier, like doing projects that would help you understand, like, so that you get the opportunity to know what you're learning in class, like to describe what a Native American tribe would look like or what their house would look like, or describe the bubbles that you need in for your ELA class and like the like topics that you need. Like, it's easier to describe things for me and using hands-on stuff.
I'd describe myself as ambitious. Like, I want to be able to, like, understand it. I want to get to where we need to be. Like, I want to get to the expectations. Like, I want to be able to understand it, be able to answer it. Like, if someone asked me, like, what it was, like, a question about it, like, I'd be able to answer it because I'd want to know. So, like, I want to be able to gather all the information and then have it with me so I can answer.
So you're just a gatherer of information.
A hoarder.
All right. Makes sense of it. Yeah. Very good. How about you, Noah? What word would describe you as a learner?
I don't know.
I would describe myself as a visual learner. Like, when like a teacher shows me like a good example and like a bad example, I understand it better when they like show me like what they mean. And what like the aspects and what they're expecting me to do. Like how Mrs. Lentz like shows us, like when she's telling us a new concept, she showed us like pictures of it and like has us like describe like what we think the concept in it is.
For me, I would also say creative, because I don't like what I do, write or say to be like what everyone else says. I don't really like the idea of being the same. So like whenever I have to do a project or write something, I will always try to make it the most different and like unique that I can, because I always want my teacher to like read my essay or something like that and like notice that it's different from everyone else's, so like they remember it and things like that.
But even in that differences, the criteria that you get in your classroom sets the expectations. You might put a little Lydia flair to it, but it's still meeting the expectations.
Yeah.
Great.
Do you mind if I come up with a word?
Yes, please. I want it recorded.
Noah, I would say you're a processor. I have Noah in studio art, and Noah is really into, I hope you don't mind me talking about your art, okay. He's really into one-point perspective right now. He's better at it than I am. he started at the beginning just playing around with the idea when everybody learned the concept. And then he took it and he tried two-point, because he started moving beyond what, and two-point is generally not something you really do until high school. So I saw that he liked it, so we kind of looked at that and we talked about how to use two-point perspective. And so then he went back and started playing with the two-point idea. Then he started playing with three-point perspective and trying that concept. And he now, he his last project, he went back and he did another one-point, but he tried new concepts that he played around with the one-point. Then he's going back to two. So he's going through process every time, and he's drawing new things that he's learning, and he goes back to what he knows really well, and then he starts putting it with the next thing that he feels slightly comfortable with, and then he'll start taking more risks, and then he goes back again, and he keeps processing over and over, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be an architect, because his pieces are phenomenal. But that's really how he moves when he's learning. And I don't know if you realize what you do or not, but I watch him. He's very methodical about what he does with his work. What do you think about that?
Agreeable.
You're agreeable? Okay. He's got the best part.
first, thank you for being here. This is really awesome. One of my questions for you as students is, how have you seen your teacher do something different because you needed, or you asked for it? And what was their experience like?
Recognize that you needed something different, or you told them you needed something different than they had planned. So have you experienced that, and what was that like for you? Lexi?
In science, our teacher, like, she'll do different, like, so one day she'll use a graph, or one day it'll be from a textbook, like how we're answering our questions. Or it'll be from just like the paper and our previous knowledge. It helps us like learn how to take information from different perspectives and use it as in for answers.
Does anyone want to add to that? Have you ever, if you can think about a time in class when you've been struggling with something and you've been able to communicate that struggle with your teacher, how has your teacher changed what he or she was doing in order to help you through that struggle? Lydia?
Sometimes, like, when I don't get a concept, I, like you said, I will, like, tell the teacher. And there have been, like, sometimes they'll, like let me stay after class and, like, give me a pass and just explain to me what I need. And then other times they will, like, print out a piece of paper that explains it for me and things like that.
So trying to show you in a different way?
Yeah. Me and Lexi have the same science teacher, and sometimes like she'll just walk around in the morning. Like, we have a thing called a science starter where we go over questions that we learned the previous day, and it might have a picture of a graph or a picture of like writing that we need to look through to find our answer, or just like in our textbook that we have. And she walks around normally while we're doing that in the morning, like checking in with us, like seeing if we understand it or not. And like if there's a big group of us that don't understand it, like she'll go over it again and like she'll break it down more, like make it easier to understand for the students.
Can I ask a follow-up? So we've talked a little bit about you having learning targets and then success criteria, and you are part of building some of that success criteria. Does that come in handy when you are struggling, where you can tell a teacher, you know, this is what I know and here's the area that I need help in? Having been a former middle school teacher and principal, the like IDK, I don't know, right? Does the success criteria give you language to work with your teachers about what you need to learn? You have no mic.
Yeah, he's gonna get the big mic.
He's like, oh wow. I would have to say that it would help you because
closer to you.
It's working.
I would have to say that it would help you because like you could like point out like, oh, I'm not understanding this concept and this concept. And if you're not understanding that, your teacher could like break it down for you, like what this concept means and how like the teacher could help you with the concept.
So do you find that you're saying more like, I don't get this, as opposed to, I just don't get it. I don't get any of it. I don't know what to do. Are you able to say more clearly, like, this is
what this IDK is like from the 90s?
YOLO.
Oh, you
can
hear
my YOLO. LOL.
So, what was the question again? I'm sorry.
Oh, wait.
I'm going to have you hold your thought, because now I'm going to lose thought. No, what did you want to say?
No.
It's okay.
Fine.
Okay. So the question was, how does that help you when you can say to the teacher, you used to maybe say, I don't get it, I don't get any of it, but now you can say, I don't specifically get this. Noah?
Okay. One of the students in Mrs. Luntz's in the
one
class.
Time.
It was like, it was on our underpainting, and it like, she was like, I don't get it. And then, like, Mrs. Lynch said, don't say I don't get it. Like, explain what part of it you don't get. And, like, it helped her.
So she had words then to explain what she
did. That was actually this morning.
That's
why we're laughing, because Noah was sitting next to Lydia, and Lydia said those exact words to me.
I don't
know. That's why
she's
laughing, so.
Lexi?
If Noah said, like, they'll help us come up with words, like, if you're just, like, all out angry, like, I don't understand this, like, I've been trying to get this the past day or so, and I just don't understand it, they'll help us, like, learn, like, what we're not understanding and, like, form words, like, so, like, you're on a topic and you're like, I don't get it, and they're like, what do you don't get, like, what are some of the things that you're not understanding? Like, what are the questions you can't answer? And they'll, like, help us through, like, walk us through how we can understand it more and what we're not understanding.
Do you need to, 10 minutes, do you need to?
Let's just open it up one last time for the question you're dying to ask or afraid to ask right now. And we're going to wrap this up. Yeah,
John,
you're gonna have
them
in the car.
Go ahead.
I'm
trying to break the ice if there are.
Yeah, no, I heard that voice. So, is there somebody back there with a question? Are we hearing things? I don't know. Okay. Yes.
I know it's changed, but how has your relationship changed with your students in your classroom before this and, you know, after?
Oh, are we trading places? Okay. That's a great question. And I feel like,
I know my students more as people, because I know, not only do I know how they learn, but I also understand what their triggers are. I understand what their frustration levels are going to be. We actually were talking about this in the car. The fact that I know when a student's going to lose their cool, if there's something that I know where their frustration is getting to hear. And so I am able to diffuse that because I can catch them beforehand. Because we have a relationship where they can talk to me, I can talk to them, they can tell me when they are feeling that, where they're feeling quite comfortable. And this kind of ties in with your question. I had a student a few weeks ago whom I've taught since fifth grade, because I teach everyone, because I'm the exploratory teacher, so I get to teach everybody. So I learn a lot of names. And I've had him for 3 years now, and he has struggled with anger issues in the classroom. And there have been times in years past where he's actually just kind of had meltdowns in the classroom, even in middle school. And I have him this year in seventh grade. And a few weeks ago, he came up to me, and we were working on a concept of contrast, where you have two, I know some of you aren't art folks, but two very different things that contrast. So you're using two different elements to show contrast. And he was working on an art piece, and he held it up, and he said, well, I've got this big flame in the middle, and I was thinking of doing little flames all around it, but I'm afraid if I do that, it's going to look more like emphasis than contrast. And I just kind of, at first I kind of stared at him, and then I'm like, okay, sorry I'm staring, but I said, do you realize, first of all, you answered your own question, so you know that you probably, because he told me, I think I should just do more flames to show the black against the red. And I said, you answered your own question, but you also just showed me that you not only understood this concept, but you understood the concept that we worked on last week, and he was able to use that terminology without really, he wasn't trying to impress me with his terminology. It was just a part of his language now. Because we talk through it, he talks with his peers with it, we talk with each other and we have meetings, and it's just more comfortable for him to use that language. And I'm seeing more success from him this year than in the last several years that I've worked with him. It's really, it's just amazing the difference I'm seeing. And we're having, our conversations and our relationship are just so much stronger.
Well, you survived.
Woo!
The last slide for the adults in the room is, these are statements from some of the research that Ed Raver and the research team that we have working with FAME. We asked for comments from students if we have
teachers who are in the FAME project, and we ask them, you know, what are they saying about their learning? And you can see some connections between what you're hearing in the kids. So you represented the student population very, very well. So I have to give you thanks, because this wasn't easy. When I told them, I met with them and I told them, described the conference, and I said, oh, there's 500 people. They went, no! And I said, no, it'd be a smaller group, but it's a rather large conference, lots of adults. So I want to say thank you. And as a Michigan State person, I had a really hard time doing this, but I did it anyway.
I love Michigan.
It's actually
nice.
I don't think I can take your question.
Can I ask one more question of the
Absolutely.
Students? Can you share any of your thoughts with the audience about the MSTAT?
Oh!
It is an assessment conference.
Well, I think it's like a really good idea to like see how much a student has improved from the past year. I just kind of wish that it wasn't as long and we could like spread it out more throughout the days. Like we could only spend like half an hour on it like per day, because it's kind of like tiring, because you wake up in the morning just to go to school to take like an hour too long test, and then you continue the rest of the day. It kind of, like, for me, it hurts my head having to stare at a screen for almost 2 hours straight every morning.
So before the next person goes, as the district assessment coordinator, I just that we cap it at 1 hour per day. So she may feel like it was 2 hours, but we cut it off after about 50 minutes and then start another question, and we spread it out over multiple days of one hour section. So I just want to say we don't make them sit there for 4 hours or 2 hours.
Yeah.
Sorry,
like
it.
Yeah.
Sure,
Priya's like it.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Hey,
did you
want to?
Oh,
yeah. I like the MSTEP because it's like helping me like remember all the concepts that I've learned throughout the year. So it's like a huge reminder of what we've learned.
But not formative.
Lexi? In fifth grade, our teacher, I really loved my teacher, but she recently retired, and she knew that it was hard and that we had to sit there for an hour because she's like had so many students. She helped us by she was like very like concerned, and she knew that it was hard for us. So like she would give us like little mints so that we can concentrate, and like she wouldn't like yell at us if we didn't understand or like tell us, I can't help you. She would gently remind us that we can't do that, or if like we broke our pencil or if we were mad, she would step out in the hallway and cool ourselves down. And she knew what we were thinking, and she really helped us like just to learn more, and she was a really great teacher.
I remember in the fourth grade that they always passed out like a piece of gum to everyone.
Yeah.
So like it keep you concentrated, like not doing like multiple things at once, so like you're not causing a distraction to anyone else. So like you're just focusing on yourself, and you can be able to focus on that because you have something going on, and then you just have that to focus on. But like doing it for like an hour feels like forever.
Feels like forever.
Yeah. Because like Leo said, you get up and then you have to go take a hard test.
Yeah.
We weathered that pretty well, didn't we, Joseph? Well, I also want to thank the adults, too, that came and brought kids today. So please help me thank Brona, especially.
Thank you.
I was about to start clapping.